WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latte from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab, adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, follow me on Twitter at Brian Lehrer. Like me on Facebook at Brian Lehrer WNYC. And 1 week ago today, we asked you to make your predictions about the 2012 election using social media. We promised a shout out to those of you who got it closest. And no, we didn't forget. We were just, as was everyone else, waiting on Florida. But now that we know the final results of the 2012 presidential elections, we can announce that five of you got it exactly right. Obama with 332 electoral votes, taking the swing states of Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, Virginia, Colorado, and Nevada. So a special shout out to our Twitter friends, Alexander McLean, Jake Eisenberg, Yoichi Haraguchi, and Aaron NYC. And a shout-out to Facebook friend Aaron Costello. You all get the official 2012 Brian Lehrer Election Prognostication Award, also known as the You Did Exactly What Nate Silver Told You to Do Award. Congratulations to you all. And with us now, New York Times correspondent Jody Cantor, also author of the book The Obamas, about the first family during their first term. Hi, Jody. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks so much, Brian.
You wrote an article after the election called Now a Chance to Catch Up to His Epical Vision about President Obama's goal of being not just a good president, but a transformational figure in American history. Wow, like Lincoln or FDR. Can you remind us of his original aspirations in that direction?
Yeah, this is the curious thing. You know, around 2006, when Barack Obama was just a year or two out of the Illinois State Senate, he was talking about running for president, and he said very openly he didn't want to be just a regular kind of president. He wanted to be a transformative figure in American history. He wanted to be one of the greats. He said this publicly. He said this privately. He actually summoned Doris Kearns Goodwin into his Senate office. He had just read her Lincoln book, Team of Rivals. He was very excited about it.
And not just Doris Kearns Goodwin. You tell us a whole panel of every presidential historian you've ever heard of. Douglas Brinkley, David Kennedy, Robert Caro, Robert Dallek. So he hoped he would get something big from these big historians, right?
That's right. He starts with Doris when he's still in the Senate. But then once he becomes president, he has these very little-known private dinners. They were supposed to be off the record with, as you say, a murderer's row of presidential historians. And the meetings were very interesting. Other presidents have met with historians before, but this had a very different feel, the historians said. It was very strategic. Obama wanted to know, you know, Teddy Roosevelt was able to push progressive legislation past a recalcitrant Congress. How can I do that? Ronald Reagan was reelected in 84 despite a negative economic environment. How can I do that? It was almost as if David Kennedy from Stanford said it was almost like he was standing back from history and trying to author his own role in it.
You describe his aspirations as being Lincoln-like, FDR-like, in terms of healing the country's divisions, addressing the country's most critical problems, turning the country in a new direction. But is it clear to you what kind of transformation, with a capital T, Barack Obama had originally in mind? I mean, before the financial crisis demanded so much attention, heal what? Change direction how?
Well, part of the reason it's so hard to articulate was that it was so sweeping, right? He wanted to erase political divisions in Washington. This is a guy who rose to power with that 2004 speech saying, there is no red America or blue America. There's only a United States in America, of America. And that was part of the almost tragic feel of what happened with the debt ceiling limit crisis in the summer of 2011, because this guy who had promised that he could bring both parties together couldn't even get a kind of common sense agreement signed around the debt ceiling raise, and instead he had to kind of capitulate to the Tea Party. So now we see his second chance, right? I thought it was fascinating that on election night, as he spoke last Tuesday night, or maybe technically Wednesday morning, we heard him use the red America or blue America line again. And, you know, it was like an alarm went off in my head when I heard that, because I said, I can't believe that in some ways he has the, we can use the word audacity because that's the Obama word, to come back to that language, even when we see that America is really so divided. But what's happening now with the fiscal cliff problem is almost like, you know, take two, right? I mean, can he almost literally rewrite history? This debt ceiling deal ended so badly. Can he do this in a much more unifying, consensus-based way that, by the way, also results in a better outcome for Democrats?
Right. But here is Doris Kearns Goodwin herself on Meet the Press yesterday talking about how Obama can succeed, and she puts it in pretty partisan terms. Listen.
He has to mobilize that base. That base was energized on election night. He said to them, your job's not done. It's not just voting. It's there to bring pressure on obstructionists if they don't get a deal done from the outside in. And I think he signaled that, as I say, that night, because he said, I've learned from you. I'm going to be a better president because of you. That was an amazing statement.
Mobilize your base. Put pressure on the obstructionists. Is that inconsistent with no red America, no blue America?
You know, it's interesting because what Goodwin and the other historians said at those private dinners was a little bit different than what she said on Meet the Press yesterday. You know, in the private dinners, what they talked about was Obama's failure to really form a kind of day-to-day connection with the nation. They talked about the powers of persuasion and leadership that some past presidents had, the way both Roosevelts really were able to kind of galvanize the feelings of the nation and turn them into action. And Obama acknowledged in these dinners that he had not done a good enough job of really harnessing people's feelings about what was going on and connecting them to his leadership. Now, Goodwin is, you know, even though she's a presidential historian, she makes her political leanings pretty clear, right? And the group of historians in general was a little bit left-leaning. So I'm not totally surprised to hear the clip of what she said on Meet the Press yesterday, because that is the way a lot of Democrats feel, right?
Yeah.
And it corresponds to some of what we know went wrong during the debt ceiling crisis. When you talk to White House officials about why that went so badly for the president, one of the things they say is that they felt at the time that because they were doing these delicate negotiations with Republicans in Washington, they did not want to publicly go out and demonize Republicans in terms of making the case for what they wanted. Now, I think what they'll try to do this time around is kind of work both ends a little more. Do the Washington piece of it, do the negotiations there, but mobilize much more public support for the idea, for instance, the number one idea here, is that wealthier people should pay higher taxes.
Yeah. So, listeners, we have a few minutes for your calls with Jody Kantor, New York Times correspondent and author of The Obamas, about what you think the biggest things are that President Obama could hope to accomplish. If he's going to try to take the second term now, doesn't have to run for re-election anymore, and become the hope and change president that you first thought he was going to be, the transformative with a capital T, as Jody puts it, president that he always hoped to be, what could he do? What should he try to do? Realistic with a divided Congress. 212-433-WNYC. If you have anything along those lines, 212-433-9692, or post it to WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. And Jody, one thing I wonder about is if he even sees the national debt as worthy of his passion in these terms. I mean, the real liberal economists, like Paul Krugman in his column today, dismiss the deficit as a problem way exaggerated by conservative deficit hawks who really have other agendas, like cutting the safety net. But the news media is all debt, 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 fiscal cliff, oh my God. Does Obama care enough to be the president who made historic compromises to solve a generational debt problem? Or does he just want to muddle through this so he can turn his attention to things that he actually cares much more about?
I think he does care about it, Brian. First of all, people say that in private he is much more concerned about the deficit than he is in public. What we saw during this presidential campaign was him present himself almost as a caricature of himself, right? Him saying, oh my God, Paul Ryan is going to take away these life-saving benefits for the elderly, you know, and I'm the Democratic protector of these ideas. But in private, he is quite concerned about the deficit. And the other thing is, I really think that he wants to rewrite what happened with the debt ceiling debacle. That was just, I mean, it's hard to overestimate what a huge loss that was for his presidency. And it's pretty rare in the presidency to get a chance to kind of redo history.
Yeah.
You know, the question I have about all of this is whether political victory is even possible on these fiscal issues, because, you know, the nature of this problem is that our country's leaders have to say to all of us, listen, guys, I hate to break the news to you, but you're all going to pay more and you're all going to get less. And that's part of the reason we haven't addressed it as a country,
right?
Because it's just a political loser. And if you solve the problem right, you make everybody really mad, right? So despite the fact that this is a very sort of happy time for Democrats and there's a lot of energy around the compromise in Washington, I am wondering what an Obama victory really looks like on this.
It's a great question. And to that point, I want to play you a clip of Bob Woodward on Meet the Press yesterday. On the screen is a document that Woodward obtained showing how much the president actually offered to trade Boehner for the grand bargain on the deficit that he tried to do during the debt ceiling debacle. Listen.
This is the confidential last offer the president, the White House, made last year to Speaker Boehner to try to reach this $4 trillion grand bargain. And it's long and it's tedious and it's got budget jargon in it. But what it shows is a willingness to cut all kinds of things, like TRICARE, which is the sacred health insurance program for the military, for military retirees, to cut Social Security, to cut Medicare. And there are some lines in there about we want to get tax rates down, not only for individuals, but for businesses. So Obama and the White House were willing to go quite far.
Bob Woodward on the Meet the Press yesterday. And Jody Cantor, I think he's making your point about how victory is going to be defined in terms that are going to make some Democrats unhappy.
But, you know, as a longtime Obama watcher, I am not surprised to see the president willing to accept a compromise that would offend a lot of Democrats. You know, there's a sense in which this president is not a classic deal maker like an LBJ, because he's, you know, not a guy who's going to work the halls of Congress person by person to get a deal. But there is a sense in which he's a classic deal maker in that a lot of different conclusions are probably acceptable to him on this. What he wants is a deal. He wants to move us past these kinds of Groundhog Day fiscal fights, right, where every couple of months we have a bruising fight over a government shutdown,
right,
or a fiscal cliff or a debt ceiling limit. He wants to, as you said a couple of moments ago, move us on to other issues. And, you know, Obama has never been a doctrinaire guy. In fact, we see that he's had some trouble drawing lines in the sand. So I'm not that surprised if, you know, there's a whole range of outcomes that would ultimately be okay with him in this.
All right. Listeners, what would make Barack Obama the transformative president, an American history-changing president, the one that he always hoped that he would be by the end of his second term? What would it be? Emily in Manhattan, what would it take for you?
Well, Well, for me, it would take his keeping his promise that he campaigned on in 2008 and dealing with the climate crisis. So particularly with Sandy and everything that we've just lived through, this is the leading issue of our time for me. And I think that the National Research Council just identified climate change as a national security issue that's going to exacerbate social, political, and economic stability, food security.
And I'm
going
to leave it there to get some other voices on, but I hear you clearly. Climate change and something real about climate change to make his mark in history. Karen in Paramus, how about for you?
Yes, hi. I'm really concerned about the issue of Obamacare. I don't think that it was explained thoroughly or clearly to the American people. I think that he needs to get in front of the camera or have somebody else, one of his representatives, get in front of the camera and really explain it really well, because I'm hearing all these stories of people getting fired because employers are preparing themselves to not be able to afford to pay more towards health insurance. And I literally had this conversation yesterday with a person who is a bankruptcy attorney who had said she was handling a massive amount of cases of people that are going to be dropped by their employer supposedly because of Obamacare.
Interesting. And yet one of the things those employers all need to do before rushing out to the bankruptcy employees or not hiring that 50th employee, because that's when you have to start covering them, is look at the sliding scale subsidies that are also part of the law that kick in depending on, you know, the shape of your business. Fabio in Montclair, what would he do to make himself a transformative capital T president for you?
I hope what he won't do is start worrying about his legacy now. I think he spent the first 4 years worrying about being reelected, and that he's going to start cutting deals in order to ensure the legacy as some kind of mega transformational president. Instead, he should focus on implementing the liberal agenda that made him president, reelected in president.
Which would be what, primarily?
Limiting the military budget, for instance, worrying about climate change and the income gap.
Thank you very much. One more. Teresa in Montville, you're on the air. Hi, Teresa.
Hi. I think that he needs to start talking about gun control. I have two young children, and I'm just becoming more and more discouraged by the power the NRA seems to have with their lobbying efforts. An assault gun rifle ban seems like a no-brainer. Why is this such a problem?
Thank you very much. So, Jody Cantor, they have a little sampling of people, I think it's fair to say, from Obama's base and the kinds of things that he that they want him to do. How would he process all this if he was listening right now?
Well, in my unofficial capacity as educated guesser of what the president might think.
Yeah, you're hired.
Thank you. You know, what he might do is cite one of the profound lessons of his first term, which is that you don't always get to choose what you deal with as president. And often the greatest presidential legacies are the result of unforeseen events that presidents had to deal with. And
like the financial crisis, which was like not what he had at all in mind when he started running for president.
I mean, if you and I had said to David Axelrod on election night 2008 that the president was going to spend a really big chunk of his first term worried about whether Greek pensioners were willing to go along with austerity measures being imposed on their country, Mr. Axelrod would have looked at us like we had three heads.
Or in 2004, when he was giving his no red state, no blue state speech at the Democratic convention, that the biggest thing he would have to deal with is a housing crash and a banking crash. People would have thought we were crazy.
Absolutely. And so I thought all of the listeners named really valid issues. I thought their educated guesses were right. I thought especially the first caller who mentioned climate change, you know, I suspect that that is very, very high on the president's desired list of priorities. But Obama's ultimate legacy could end up being a complete surprise to all of us.
Right. And we're just about out of time, but let me circle back a little bit to the historians you quoted who he met with early on, and they gave you so-so reviews, finally, on Obama's accomplishments in his first term. Not transformative with a capital T, one of them said. Couldn't put principles into practice. Things like that. But do you think that the very fact of his reelection changes that to a meaningful degree. Now he's the equality president who passed Obamacare and made it stick, and the peace president who's ending two unpopular wars, and the economics president who saved the country from the brink, and the political master who got reelected despite spending a lot of all that political capital.
Absolutely. They all said, when I, you know, and I interviewed them before the election, and they all said the outcome really depends on whether he's reelected or not. I mean, for one thing, his signature accomplishment, Obamacare, would have been wiped out if Romney had won. You know, but that said, there's always a problem in whether you're me writing for the Times or the historians talking about Obama or you and your listeners thinking about him, which is, what is the measure we use to evaluate Obama, right? Do we use that measure that he set up for himself in 2006, 2007, where he said, it's not enough for me to be a competent president, a judicious president. I'm going to be one of the great presidents of all time. I'm going to put this country on a transformative new path. Or do we use this kind of milder measure, right, where we say, this is clearly a, you know, thoughtful, responsible president who is trying very hard to address the nation's problems, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, there's a way in which Obama, you know, planted that initial flag and set out that initial standard, and it will be hard to ever forget the campaign promises he made in 2008. Yep.
Jody Kantor, New York Times correspondent and author of the book, The Obamas. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for our last few minutes today, we'll open the phone lines back up for more of your reports from the ground in areas affected by Sandy, whether it's a report from your own block or from a neighborhood where you volunteered this weekend. We want to hear from you. Call in and give us your ground report on areas recovering from Sandy. Happy to say we have our regular call-in number back, finally, after storm damage, and that is 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We know many of you lent a hand this weekend, either going to areas of the Rockaways or hard-hit areas of Staten Island or to Long Beach or to Long Beach Island or wherever. What did you see? Who did you help? What can you tell us about the recovery efforts 2 weeks into Sandy that you think other people need to know? 212-433-WNYC, your reports from the ground. And, of course, it can be from your own block if this is happening on your block, or it can be from a place that you saw while volunteering. Anyone want to report on Broad Channel or Howard Beach? I know people had signs in Howard Beach saying, hey, we're the neighborhood that New York City forgot because it wasn't the Rockaways, it wasn't Staten Island, but still very hard hit. What's the latest from Newdorp? Or if you were in Red Hook, what did you see? Or Long Beach? Or Oceanside, so hard hit. People are still protesting against LIPA in Oceanside or anywhere on the Jersey Shore. We'll take the last few minutes for your on-the-ground reports. 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. We'll put you right on the air right after this.